This is New Beginnings, hosted by award-winning broadcaster and speaker Freddie Bell. A program for and about America's 78 million baby boomers. Here's your host, Freddie Bell.
Hi, everybody. I'm Freddie Bell, and welcome to New Beginnings. Our program features an update on COVID. We'll talk to Leibel Sternbach this week. Also, Joe McKenzie is here discussing your career options. We'll look at what happened this week and also share today's words to the wise. You're listening to New Beginnings, and our program is underway right now. Joining us now is Dr. Michael Osterholm, epidemiologist, a regular guest on New Beginnings, and we're talking about the coronavirus. First of all, doctor, welcome to the show, and I'm just curious, where are we right now? Can you talk about waning immunity? And I understand that there might be a new variant coming down the pike. Can you give us an update this weekend on New Beginnings?
We're seeing in the current U.S. a plateau of cases, only now starting to appear to come down to a quote-unquote lower case elevation. Deaths are now 8% lower over the past 2 weeks, with an average of 437 lives lost each day. Hospitalizations are down 10%, and ICU numbers are down 8% over the past 2 weeks. This movement is in the right direction, but we still don't know what this all means. There are just no clues telling us what the virus will do next, rather with regard to new variants or subvariants, or what it means with regard to human waning immunity. However, we will continue to hear some public health figures saying that basically the pandemic is behind us. We just don't know. With the new boosters approved and some shots going into arms, people seem to be looking more and more into the future. We've heard of some people making long-term predictions about the future of this virus and scheduling of vaccines, but simply there is no evidence informing these predictions. The past two winters have brought along surges in cases, hospitalizations, and deaths, but the trends leading up to these surges were nothing like the high plateau we've just seen. And we don't know what variant will come next. Wastewater data indicates that COVID-19 concentrations across the country are slightly increasing, staying the same, and in some areas slightly reduced. It's far too soon to make a prediction about this winter. But let me just share with you where I think the country is, not where the virus is, but where the country is. There was results of a very important survey released this past week, which gives us a sense of where Americans are with regard to the COVID pandemic. These data came from the Axios-Ipsos Coronavirus Index Study, which has been tracking the activity and the beliefs of Americans throughout the duration of the pandemic. And of note, this particular survey data, which had been routinely updated, has now been noted that as of this past week, this is the final regularly scheduled installment of this index, which says they're done with it at Axios Ipsos. And this began back in mid-March of 2020. So right there, that should tell you something about the signal of what they believe is the current status. The latest results from their survey finds a country that has largely, though not completely, moved on from the pandemic. As they quote, the perceived risk the virus poses in Americans' minds has steadily declined since the Omicron surge in the winter of 2022, and Americans have continued to engage in out-of-home behaviors despite cases rising in the beginning of the summer. If you look at their very specific data, they found that while most Americans say they believe there is still a possibility of them catching COVID, their perceived risk of contracting the virus continues to decline. Many indicate they have already returned to their normal pre-COVID lives. The share of Americans who report being concerned about COVID-19, 57%, is among the lowest captured throughout the entire pandemic. If you look at other data from the survey, it's clear that Americans now are in a holding pattern on mask use, with many choosing not to wear them regularly when leaving home. Of course, there was no clarification of what kind of mask. That said, Americans do report wearing masks in different rates depending on what they are doing out of the home. For those who do report wearing masks regularly, some feel self-conscious. The share of Americans who report occasionally or never wearing a mask outside their home has remained constant since June. Around 63% report not wearing or very rarely wearing a mask. It surely is higher than it was during the height of the Omicron wave in mid-January, when only 27% of the population indicated they did not wear a mask. If we look, fewer report wearing masks at all times or sometimes on a public transportation and a rideshare, only 39%. Finally, the lowest share of Americans report wearing masks at all times or sometimes are in grocery stores, 33% of the time, and when walking into a restaurant to dine indoors, only 27% of the time. The bottom line message here is we have moved on. The country is over with this pandemic, yet I just shared with you today that we're still looking at 430 to 450 deaths a day at a time where had this occurred 2 years ago, it would have been a house on fire moment. I said my initial answer, I don't know where we're going with this, but we're beginning to track some movement right now within the variant subvariants of COVID that are at least, if nothing else, intriguing, curious, and in some cases, concerning. We have not seen anything that has appeared to bump off BA5, which would say that this is what we've been seeing. This is why we have this plateau. It's kind of in a steady state situation with some downward trend. But now we're beginning to see some new activity with another subvariant. Originally, BA2.75 was thought that it might be an important new competitor against BA5. However, even though in India it appeared that it took off with some extensive energy, we haven't seen it really move. But now we're seeing an additional new subvariant, BA2.75.2, which actually does have some very concerning activity and very well may be what will replace BA5. Will it win out or not? I don't know. If you talk to many of the viral geneticists, the people who are tracking this, there are some mixed feelings about it, but many are very concerned that this may be the new variant coming. We not only have the intersection of dealing with new virus variants coming down the pike, but we're also going to deal with the issue of waning immunity in humans. Could this be the perfect storm collision course for at least major increased activity? Not saying we're going back to the big peaks that we had with Alpha, Delta, and Omicron, but that it surely could change the game for where we're at right now. I wish I could give you more conclusive information to say, yes, no, this is where we're going. I can't. Just know the virus is not done with us yet. The sublineage data is telling us that. The number of deaths continue to be a real challenge. But as you saw from the data on human behavior, we're done with the pandemic. So we'll see where this takes us over the weeks ahead. It's going to be quite a ride. I'm quite convinced of that.
That's Dr. Michael Osterholm. I'm Freddie Bell, and this is New Beginnings.
In today's world, we really need words of encouragement. Introducing Words to the Wise by Freddie Bell. Let your mind be opened by the wisdom of thought. Let the inspiration of the words feed your mind, body, and spirit. Regardless of the issues you face each day, Words to the Wise by Freddie Bell can help you power through. Words to the Wise by Freddie Bell, a handy reference. Available on Amazon, FreddieBell.com, and Barnes & Noble.
Minnesota is home to a robust network of more than 300 food shelves that may be able to offer additional food support to families and individuals who are suffering from hunger. Hunger Solutions can locate a food shelf near you. Call the Minnesota Food Helpline at 1-888-711-1151. 888-711-1151 or use the interactive map at hungersolutions.org. This message powered by the Minnesota Department of Health.
And now, our supporting partner, AARP in the Twin Cities.
Hello again, everyone. I hope you're having a wonderful day. And joining us right now from AARP Minnesota, one of our proud supporters, is Mary Jo George. She is AARP Minnesota's Director of Advocacy. Hello and welcome back to the show, Mary Jo. It seems like it's been a long time.
Well, it's so great to be back, Freddie, and we're really excited to talk about this caregiving event that we have coming up.
All right. So the caregiving event, before we really get into it, can you tell us when it's taking place so our listeners can mark their calendars?
Yes. It's October 5th at noon to 1:15 p.m., and it's going to be a virtual event. So people, they can log on from their home or their workplace, and we kind of did it over the noon hour and shortened up the length of the event so that family caregivers could hopefully take time out of their day to attend the event.
So this is a chance for caregivers to get to the polls.
Yes. Actually, it's really twofold. One, you know, we know that every day family caregivers perform a labor of love, and they are, in fact, our backbone of America's long-term care system, but they face so many challenges. And so what we want to do at this event is we want caregivers to share their challenges, and then we want to be able to provide them with existing resources and tips on how to reduce some of the caregiving stress that is part of the job. But we also then want to harness the voice of family caregivers in the upcoming election. You know, as a society, Freddie, we have to do so much more to support family caregivers. And so while caregiving is often thought of as a very personal and family matter, it's a really important public policy and public health issue. So we're hoping that caregivers can learn something about some of the policies we're fighting for, and then ask their candidates to support policies that can support them. So that's kind of what we have lined up.
48 million Americans care for older parents. That's astounding.
Absolutely. That's in Minnesota, it's nearly 600,000. And so that's a voice that we hope to harness so that we can have them, you know, really put pressure on candidates running for elected office that they need to do more to support them. And we're so excited that we're having, it's an interactive conversation, and that our moderator is Shaletta Brunrich of Shaletta Makes Me Laugh. And we think she will be very engaging. We also have Robin Frazier, who is the Associate Director of Equity and Community Engagement at the University of Minnesota at the School of Public Health. And then we also have Porvi Bhatt. She's a healthcare executive, but will be sharing her caregiving journey, because sometimes we see that caregivers may face many, in cultural communities, may face even different challenges. So we want to have a real great discussion about, you know, how can we help family caregivers and how can family caregivers help themselves when it comes to the election this year, because it's very important, the midterm elections on November. Let's see. I was going to say, what is the date of the election? I better not screw that up, but I think it's November 8th. So
that's really important. And you're also on that panel. So if our listeners would like to register, how do they do that, or is it even necessary?
Well, we would like folks to register, because we are going to send out a family caregiver toolkit for people who do register. And you can find the registration information at aarp.org/MN for Minnesota.
All right. One more time.
aarp.org/MN.
She's Mary Jo George, Associate Director for Advocacy, and I can't thank you enough for telling us about Caregivers at the Polls. That's October 5th. It's online. You can check out our podcast at freddiebell.com. Thanks, Mary Jo.
Thank you, Freddie. Have a great day.
You too.
This is a news-oriented broadcast, and all information is educational in nature, is not intended to be legal, securities, tax, or insurance advice. Please consult with the appropriate professional before acting on information heard during the broadcast.
You're listening to New Beginnings. New Beginnings with Freddie Bell.
Now let's turn our attention to financial health and retirement with Libel Sternbach, Amazon's best-selling author of Living with Financial Anxiety and Authenticity. So let's pick up on the discussion where we started last week. Libel, we've been talking about the 4% rule as a way to level set for folks who may have missed a portion of our program. What is the 4% rule?
So the 4% rule is this idea, this number that you could, in theory, take 4% out of your retirement savings every single year and not run out of money in retirement. That you can consistently take that 4% and adjust it every year for inflation and you'd be good. It's a nice theory, right? And that is what it is.
It's just a theory because things changed so much from 1925 to 2015 and even to now that it's more of a structure for doing an analysis rather than a hard and fast rule. Is that correct?
Yeah, that is a really great way of looking at it. And what I would call it, right, think of it as more as an innovation in personal finance, right? The 4% rule was a milestone, a methodology of looking at retirement income and saying, how much can you realistically draw down every year without running out of money in retirement, understanding that the future will not look like the past.
Interesting. We're talking with Leibel Sternbach. So here's a question. It's a personal question, Leibel, forgive me, but have you ever used the 4% rule when planning your retirement?
So first of all, the further away you are from retirement, the more the 4% rule is a good rule of thumb. It's when you actually get to the point where you're like, well, I need to start taking money out of my account, right? I actually need to retire. Do I have enough money? That the 4% rule becomes a problematic. Now, I do use the 4% rule in my planning, but I use it in the way of saying, do we have a thumbs up of like we have enough money, or do we need to do additional work to see do we actually have enough money to retire? Because if we have 4%, the way I look at it, right, the stock market, when we look at the historical returns of just the S&P 500, so you're just invested in the top 500 companies in the United States, when we look at the historical return that has had over the last 200 years, that has averaged 6.7% after inflation. So that means no matter whether inflation was like 10%, right, or inflation was, 1%, after inflation, statistically, that has returned an average of 6.7%. So if I only take 4% from that, that still leaves me with 2.7% to put towards next year's retirement and my future, right? So I'm still accumulating wealth over the long run. Probably end up hurting you, as any financial planner will tell you. But as a rule of thumb, do you have enough or not? Or do we need to figure out how to cut expenses or increase our income? I think it's a good rule of thumb, because worst case scenario, being 100% invested in the stock market, which everyone says not to do, right? But if you had to, you could be 100% invested in the stock market and you would be okay, right? So I see it as kind of a green light, red light thing of, are we safe to proceed with our retirement planning, or do we have more work to do?
Interesting. So the person that you're consulting with, the person who's coming to you, has to have a real good investment in working with you in order to make this plan, even though it's not an exact plan, to work out well for that individual who'll eventually be retiring.
Yeah, you need to have an investment of, this is something that we want to do, and we look at, and you need to know what your expenses are, right? Because if you don't know what your expenses are, then the 4% rule doesn't mean anything, mm-hmm. right? Because you have no idea how much money you even potentially need in retirement. But yes, once we give you that green light, red light, all it says is we got to continue planning. It just tells us, are we planning to how to grow your money faster or reduce expenses? Or are we planning how do we actually transition into a taking income portion of retirement?
So you got a baby boomer sitting in front of you, and there's a lot of baby boomers in America right now. And they're saying, okay, in just X amount of years, maybe it's 10 years from now, maybe they're the younger baby boomer, that and Mr. Leibel Sternbach, I don't have 25%. I know that my money is going to run out. I just did pulled out the abacus, and that's what it told me. Am I really in trouble? Can you help me?
So you're not in trouble, right? I would say that right off the bat, right? Just because you're going to run out of money, just because it says you're going to run out of money doesn't mean you're going to run out of money. Right? Because it is trying to project into the future. It's trying to look at a crystal ball. It's making assumptions that may not be accurate. Right? So what we want to do, right, when it says, when it starts flashing red lights, all that says is, one, we got to be super careful about the decisions we make, because every decision that we make is going to have more of an impact on us than it will have on regular people. Right? So that's number one. Number two, it means we probably will have to get creative. Like something that I didn't mention about the Trinity study is they found that 4%, it went along with a portfolio that was 50% equities, 50% bonds, which right now anyone would tell you would be nuts. So the, you know, they over time that changes, and it's all based on, you know, what historical returns and what the projected future returns are. Mm-hmm. So we may need to take on more risk, or we may need to say, you know, we need to prepay some of your expenses to bring those expenses down, right? There are things that you can do. All it does is it says where you need to focus your planning. It does not tell you whether you can retire or not.
Everyone, we're talking with Lybal Sternbach. He is the author of Authenticity. And so this is really, use your term, we're really helping the retiree to live authentically by really getting in close touch with what their expenses are, what their plans are, and then crafting something that is unique to them. How often do you see this person who doesn't have that, that 25% that they can work with, or they're not even close? Can you help most people that you see?
Yeah. And I will tell you, on any given day, right, you know, I have had days where I have met with someone who had, you know, less than $100,000. And in that same afternoon, met with somebody who had, you know, millions. And they both have the same concerns. And the truth is that I'm more concerned for the person who has millions than the person who has less.
Why is that?
Because a person who has millions is going to get hit with a whole lot of taxes. They're not going to get any kind of government assistance in anything. They also have a much higher living lifestyle. So they actually need that money to maintain that lifestyle. And when you start telling them, well, you know, you can't afford it, right? That they don't know how to handle that because they've always been making, you know, $200,000-$400,000 a year in order to accumulate that. So they don't know what to do. On the other hand, right, the person who only has $100,000, $150,000, whatever, right, doesn't have a lot of money in their bank account. They've been living frugally. They know how to live frugally. They know they don't have a lot of money, right? So they're more willing to seek out, you know, okay, how can I reduce my costs? What, you know, can I relocate to somewhere that's cheaper to live, right? They're more okay going for government assistance programs. There's lots and lots of welfare programs out there if you do not have a lot of assets. Whereas you talk to someone who has a few hundred thousand in the bank and they feel like it's beneath them. Why is it beneath you? You're going to have run out of money. You're going to be eating cat food while the person who has $50,000 in the bank is going to have a better lifestyle than you because they weren't afraid to tap into the tax dollars that they've been paying.
Wow, that mindset is so interesting. So you're talking about different methodologies. Talk about other methods that a retiree can use to ensure that they have enough money during their retirement, whether they're that $100,000 to $200,000 person or the $1 million person.
So the number one thing, and I hope that this gets communicated, you know, through my writing, through the podcast, through the classes I teach, the number one thing that you have to do is reduce your losses in retirement. In retirement, your single job is to move the needle from the red and into the black. Right? Doesn't matter how much your portfolio gains. What really matters is that you don't lose, because especially in the early years, just prior to retirement and the first few years in retirement, those losses will have an outsized impact on your retirement lifestyle. And those losses, doesn't matter if it's from the market, doesn't matter whether it's overpaying in taxes, doesn't matter whether it's paying retail when you could have paid wholesale, right? You know how much toilet paper you use. You can go to Costco and you can buy that in bulk and save yourself, right? Now, if you got millions, that $100 probably isn't going to help you. But if you only got, you know, $50,000 in the bank or $100,000 or whatever, right? That $100 times 25 years, that can actually make a difference. That can be the difference between eating out or not, between being able to take an extra trip, right? Buying a gift for your grandkids. And we got to look for all of those things because whether they're small or big, right, that's going to depend on each of us and our lifestyles. But we need to look for the things that we can avoid those losses in our portfolio, right? Whatever we can, it doesn't matter where it's coming from. And it doesn't matter whether it's inflation, right? And the other thing is unexpected expenses, right? That's another expense that people kind of like we're blind to because it doesn't happen regularly. But making sure you have adequate insurance so that if a tree falls on your house or, you know, some kid is learning to drive and drives through your living room, you're covered for that, right? These things happen. They don't happen often. Mm-hmm. The chance of it happening in your lifetime may not be very high. But if it does happen, will it wipe out your savings, right? Because that's what ends up happening to a lot of people. wipes out your savings, and then you end up on the GoFundMe pages, and you know, collecting the collection plates, at church and whatever, because you didn't have the resources. You could have paid $10 more on your, you know, property insurance to be protect against it, but it wasn't on your mind.
You're speaking to it, and we're just about out of time. What do you think the one biggest mistake that most people make when it comes to planning for their own retirement?
The number one mistake for planning for retirement is looking at all these rules and putting yourself in a box, right? You do your best, you save as much as you can, and then you figure out how to make it work, which, number one, right, minimizing your losses. But then number two, try to figure out how to create the lifestyle with the money that you have, because it is possible. It is very possible. You just, the question is, how creative do you need to get?
Interesting. So our listeners, I know we're listening with bated breath, especially the baby boomers, those who are closer to retirement than not. Do you have some resources that you can share with us to get more information about the 4% rule and the kind of planning that needs to take place right now?
Yeah. So on my website, if you search 4% rule, you'll see I've got a bunch of articles on that, as well as for retirement planning. On your resources, I've got a bunch of guides. I've also got a course, a workshop that I just came out with called The Simple Path to a Golden Retirement, where I walk you through, you know, it's a high level workshop of step by step. These are the decisions that you need to make. You know, how do you determine how much money you need in retirement, you know, Social Security, taxes, what I need to focus on, or I'm actually good to, you know, probably retire. Let me actually engage with a financial advisor or the planning process to actually transition into retirement.
Very good. What is the website for our listeners?
Yields4U.com. That's yields, the number four, the letter U.com.
Thank you, Leibel. We look forward to hearing from you again next week. Leibel's website is LeibelOnFire.com. That's LeibelOnFire.com. And more New Beginnings is straight ahead. Now it's time just for a little fun on New Beginnings. You can be relatively sure that when McDonald's first introduced the McRib sandwich in 1981, they didn't have a clue what was to come. Because over the years, the sandwich has gone from a marketing flop to an almost cult-like status among the McDonald's faithful. The McRib is a seasoned, boneless pork patty shaped like a rack of ribs that has been covered in barbecue sauce and topped with onions and dill pickles. All of that goodness is then put on a home-style bun. What makes the McRib so special is that it is only available for a limited time at the fast food chain. According to MASH.com, normally the McRib arrives sometime in the fall around late October. However, the last few years have been anything but normal, as you know. Last year, McDonald's waited until November 1st to bring the McRib back to celebrate its birthday. In 2020, the sandwich did not return until well into December due to the pandemic-related issues. The 2 years prior to that, however, the fan favorite returned right on schedule in October. I've got four things that you probably didn't know. It's time to level up your IQ this weekend. It's estimated that 118 billion people have died since humans began. Candy maker Mars Inc. once wrote to Scottish Pub saying that it did not support the establishment's deep-fried Mars bar because it went against the company's commitment to promoting healthy, active lifestyles. Right. Paleoanthropologists believe the first soup was made from hippo meat. Yes, hippopotamus meat. In 2012, White Castle tried to launch a new fast food concept called Laughing Noodle, which offered a menu of all noodles from American mac and cheese to Asian noodle dishes. Can you guess this? Sometimes they're 27 feet across, other times 36 feet. What are they? Tennis courts. A singles court is 27 feet across. A doubles court is 36 feet across. And what about this advice for children? The smartest advice on raising children is to enjoy them while they're still on your side. There are three ways to get something done. Number one, do it yourself. Number two, hire someone to do it. And number three, forbid your children to do it. Cleaning your house while your children are at home is like trying to shovel the driveway during a snowstorm. And an alarm clock is a device for awakening people who don't have small children. Just a few thoughts about children. And finally, it's wacky but it's true. A person who tried to rob an ATM fell asleep at the scene of the crime. A man in Turkey who broke into a bank to steal from an ATM in the lobby was found fast asleep on the floor by a janitor. The janitor stumbled over the suspect 2 hours before opening and called in police, who showed up just in time to catch a tired man staggering out of the building. Just for fun this week, and I'm Freddie Bell.
You're listening to New Beginnings. New Beginnings with Freddie Bell.
This is New Beginnings, and now we turn our attention to your career. And who better than Joe McKenzie, the founder of Ripple Connects? He turns candidates into contenders, and he's helped I don't know how many thousands of people to get on the right track or to even get on a track toward really advancing their careers. His website is RippleConnects.com. The telephone number to reach Joe McKenzie is 763-438-1621. Good morning, Joe. Happy weekend to you, and I'm glad you're here.
Thank you, Freddie Bell. How are you today?
Unbelievable, and I'm excited to talk about second careers. I think I've had second, third, and fourth careers in my lifetime. Well, I want to talk about your network, second careers, and staying connected. Let's first talk about your network. Why is that important with your career?
Well, it's important in your career, and it's also important after you decide to maybe take up a second career or go into retirement, because networks are filled with pockets of people, pockets of groups, independent, distinct network nodes. And I might be the first person in Twin Cities radio to talk about this, but I know firsthand. I watched my father, who was a World War II veteran, in his retirement years. One day he'd be going to the Knights of Columbus, and then the next day he'd be going hanging out with, you know, for a luncheon with his railroad friends that he worked 40 years with. But he had all these different network nodes, these groups of people. And he was probably the most satisfied person I've ever seen in retirement, because he looked forward to that engagement. And that was his network. And he taught me well. He knew that each one of these networks gave him different satisfaction, different connection. And that's how we stay connected to in our retirements, is that we can go to these different areas. So that's our network, filled with people, but distinct nodes.
Everybody, we're talking with Joe McKenzie, and we're talking about your network, second careers, and staying connected. So talk about how all three of these aspects, your network, a second career, and staying connected, how they work together.
Well, you think about it, the people that we know can help us carve out or identify new opportunities, which could result in a second career, right?
That's right.
People that know us well, our network, see more than just a resume of where we've been. And that's where that second career may come in. They know our transferable skills. They know our motivations, our leadership, our emotional intelligence. Our networks see stuff in us that we don't even see in ourselves. So that's where the second career comes about. I've had several experiences where people say, you know, I think you'd be a great, you know, coach over here, or working with people, or being in the nonprofit sector. And it's because my network, that second or third careers start to come about. It may not happen immediately, Freddie, but I can tell you that that your network can help you, give you that clarity.
That's interesting. I think about when you're just examining that, I was thinking about a real estate agent. It's like, what does a real estate agent have to do with your career? Well, I'm thinking about the real estate agent goes to get listings, and they have these people that they've worked with over the years, helping them to get in their first, second, even their third homes. And I've heard of a pocket listing where a listing may come on and they'll not really publish it right away, but they say, you know what? Mm-hmm. This listing might work really well for Joe McKenzie, because I know what this guy looks for. I know what he's looking for in a home. And this is the perfect idea for him, even though Joe McKenzie might not be looking for a home at that particular time. So is that what you're talking about with how your network, your advocates can help you if you're looking for that second stanza of your career?
Absolutely. It's because they recognize something in us and they match that with what that organization may need or that industry needs. And that is a great example of that. They see what we bring to the table, our leadership, our emotional intelligence, and et cetera. But you're right. That is how second careers often happen. We just don't go to the internet and type in second careers. We actually have conversations with people with the knowledge that they have that they share with us that helps us refine our search. And yes, our diverse network nodes, you know, where we're volunteering, our faith organization, where we're leaders in civic groups, our colleagues in the industry that we're in are all different sources, different, distinct and independent network nodes that see us in a different light. And so the more you have, the more chances you have for second careers, the better chance that you're going to stay connected into your retirement years. We all know that the more you stay connected to your community and individuals, you know, there's a lot of long-term benefits to aging in place because of that. Why wouldn't you carve out these different network nodes, you know, based upon what my dad, I saw him well into his late 80s, get excited to go hang out with his railroad buddies or go to the Knights of Columbus. Those are all areas that he really stayed connected to, and that helped him as he aged in place over the years.
So this is not something that all of a sudden you retire and then you go, okay, I need to get my network together. This is cultivated over time. Is that right?
That's right. More than likely, most people will have some type of network already in place. They just don't see it in the way I'm framing it today. But if you do look at it, you know, from your volunteer or your faith organization or your colleagues or alumni association or civic group, those are all distinct independent network nodes that we can all be a part of over time. We can share ourselves and our time with them in second part of our career and into retirement. And that's why it's so important to be talking about that. We talk about networking or we have all these faces of people that we can think of. When it really comes down to it, one day you're going to be here and then one day you're going to be over there. Those are those nodes that are going to help us with second career opportunities and just staying connected to people in your community.
So this is not like a big announcement that you're making and you're saying, okay, network, I'm getting ready to retire, so I need you to help me into my retirement with another opportunity or a community event or something like that. This is something that happens organically, in your opinion?
Yes. Absolutely. I think it's taking place now, but if we view it in a different way, that can really play to our benefit if we see it as that. And with retirement, obviously we have a little bit more time. We can add more network nodes or do more with those independent, distinct network nodes. And that's the reason I brought this up today is because I've seen others that have benefited from that. And what if you want a second career in your 60s or 70s? This is a great way to unearth some of those transferable skills and match them with what's needed in different industries here today.
How can we learn more about developing network nodes, developing second careers, and staying connected, Joe McKenzie?
I think you start with the people that you know. I think you utilize social media like LinkedIn to help you see those opportunities out there and those, you know, different groups, different group dynamics of, you know, how you can apply your skills. And you may learn of a group that, you know, maybe you're meant to be part of a civic group that you want to be more involved with. There's lots of opportunities out there. Or you want to return to your alumni and be a part of the alumni association or doing some mentoring. I think bring the world to you through the website LinkedIn, but also bring the world to you through increase conversations with the people that you know, and that ripples your network out too, because through next level of conversations, you may unearth another network node that you hadn't previously thought of.
I think you've turned on the light for a lot of people who are listening this weekend to our conversation. Joe, we got to leave it right there, but I know that you do some fine work. You help to build networks. You help people to develop their second careers and to walk into retirement proudly. Is that a part of the fine work you do at Ripple Connects?
Yes, we do, Freddie Bell. We try to turn candidates into contenders.
And you're listening to New Beginnings. And our never-ending effort to find valuable information and insight in all areas, it's time to bring in Cassie Crandall with this week's Three Things.
Thank you, Freddie. Thing one this week, it's fall in Minnesota. probably my favorite season. I love those fall colors, and there's so many festivals and events to get out to across the state. Here's one in southern Minnesota, Septoberfest in southern Minnesota in Wabasha. Join us for our 12th annual Septoberfest, featuring an array of exhibits including the largest pumpkins, tallest sunflowers, scarecrows, pumpkin derby, I'm not sure what that is, German heritage, and topiaries. Meander Wabasha's autumn decorations throughout town and enjoy German music and food. Visit the Eagle Center for special events. This is going on daily through Saturday, October 22nd. And my thing number two this week, are you a fan of David Bowie? Well, did you know there's a film, documentary, about David Bowie? Moon Age Daydream illuminates the life and genius of David Bowie, one of the most prolific and influential artists of our time. Never-before-seen footage, performances, and music, the feature-length cinematic odyssey explores David Bowie's creative, musical, and spiritual journey. The film is guided by David Bowie's own narration and is the first officially sanctioned film on the artist. It's about 2 hours 15 minutes long, PG-13, 90% on Rotten Tomatoes. That's pretty good. Playing in AMC theaters and some IMAX theaters. Moon Age Daydream. If you like David Bowie, check it out. And last but certainly not least, my thing three this week. Surprise, surprise, I have a quote for you. The best part of being authentic is that there is no image to maintain. You will delight some and disturb others, and none of it will concern the truth of your being. Have a great week, everybody. For New Beginnings, I'm Cassie Crandall.
Thanks so much, Cassie. We'll talk to you again next week. It's time for the buzz. Woody Allen is announcing his retirement from filmmaking. While in Europe to work on his 50th film, the longtime director told a Spanish newspaper that his upcoming French-language film will be his last. At 86, he plans to dedicate his twilight years to writing. The announcement comes after he says he never thought of retiring at a 2020 press conference in support of his film, Rifkin's Festival. Allen has spent more and more time shooting films in Europe as support for his work in the United States has sank over abuse allegations concerning his daughter, Dylan Farrow. A world-famous landmark is about to get a fresh look. Officials say a crew of 10 workers will apply roughly 400 gallons of paint to the Hollywood sign. Setup is underway, and the project is expected to be completed in November. Sherwin Williams will run the project, while Los Angeles-based Duggan & Associates will apply coats to the 45-foot-high sign that sits atop Mount Lee. You can watch painters at work online by visiting hollywoodsign.org/webcam. This year marks the centennial for the iconic sign that originally read Hollywood Land. It was first created by an advertisement for a local real estate development. And Wheel of Fortune could be nearing its end. Host Pat Sajak opened up about the future of the game show in a recent interview, and he says he doesn't think the show will make it to another 40th anniversary. Sajak says it's been an honor to have hosted the show for so many years, and he knows Wheel of Fortune will live on in the hearts of fans forever. He also says that years go by fast and it's getting near the end. This December will mark 41 years of Sajak hosting Wheel of Fortune. That's the buzz, and I'm Freddie Bell. As New Beginnings continues, we now take you to the spirituality portion of our program, where we introduce the senior minister of Unity South Twin Cities, the Reverend James Stacy. We now join Reverend Stacy with a program already in progress.
Now, after a little research, I learned that the Winston Churchill Foundation denies that Churchill ever made this famous saying. So many people give him credit for it, so we'll just informally give him credit. The words, "We make a living by what we get, but we make a life by what we give." We make a living by what we get, We make a life by what we give. Thank you, Winston. Labor Day, as we celebrate it now, is often a time of picnics, sales, acknowledgement of the end of summer, the end of the Minnesota State Fair. Lots of social activities. But let's recall for a moment how it began in the 19th century. It was a recognition of the labor movement as it was organizing, and it was deemed a time to praise the work of Americans and their contributions through their efforts to our common good, to the well-being of our country, through production and building. Now, it had a little bit of a difficulty. Some in the very beginning wanted to associate it with May Day, but May Day was becoming associated, especially in Europe, with the idea of work from a communist perspective. And so in America, it was deemed that the first Sunday of September, first Monday of September, would be the best time to celebrate this notion of labor, not as from a communistic perspective, but the collective work of a people to build up their cities, their states, the nation of the United States. And from a spiritual perspective, we all contribute to the building of our society. We know that from the depths of our truth teachings. In our unity teachings, we emphasize the power of circulation as we generously give and receive. So, the last Sunday of this September 2022, we will celebrate the 30th anniversary of the dedication of this beautiful building to the Ministry of Unity South. It will be a special Sunday. Put it on your calendar because you don't want to miss it unless you absolutely have to be out of town. And the fair will be over. So that's not an excuse. But as we acknowledge the dedication of this building, we're doing something like Labor Day in that we're acknowledging the generosity and the hard work, or at least work with ease, of those who gave us the legacy of our church home. This beautiful building that we come to every Sunday and often during the week. Some of you are still sitting in this room that were a direct part of that effort. And on that Sunday, I'll be sure to count out the many, many, many years you've been involved in this church. We'll look at those statistics. But many have passed on. Many have moved to other locations. But that shouldn't dim our appreciation for the gift we were given. And how do we treat a beautiful gift, prize, even a trophy? We treat it with respect. We polish it. We care for it. We keep it clean. We repair it as necessary. And we should have that same dedication to this structure. And many of you do. You keep these doors open, this building heated and cooled and illuminated by your efforts. So please join in that celebration on September 25th. And I might as well announce it'll also be time for a little special nourishment after the service. There will only be one service on the 25th so that the entire family of Unity South can come together in one celebration, a quick but delicious meal, and then the board will present a update meeting and bring you up to date on many of our projects, where they are, what the ministry teams are doing, and so forth. So today, with this idea of giving and receiving through our work, our effort in life, let's consider the balance that we have in our individual lives, giving and receiving. There's a story told in the early Christian movement in the first century in a community led by Peter, who would become, at least symbolically, the first pope. And Peter had this community. And I don't know if you remember in those early Christian communities, when you came into it, you gave everything you had to the community. The community then dealt it out as people needed it. So it was really a commune form of living. But Peter said something very significant in that. He said, no individual in our community should be pressed to give to the point of depletion, strain, pain. No one should be pushed that far. He said, if we all work together, no one individual suffers with the burden when we all work together. How often have I said Charles Fillmore's words from a century ago, in our unity of purpose, that is when we all come together in a collective work and work shoulder to shoulder, so to speak, then the work is done with what? Ease. Thank you. Well, today and the next two Sundays, I'm going to take some cues from a brand new book with this interesting title, The Wonder Drug. The Wonder Drug. Well, it was probably chosen by its two authors who happen to be medical doctors, Stephen Trzejacek and Anthony Mazzarelli. They both explored scientific research in many fields on the subject of serving others, and their conclusion that scientific research today supports the great benefit to health and well-being for those whom they term live to givers.
You just heard a message coming from the Reverend James Stacy, the senior minister of Unity South in the Twin Cities. More information is found at their website at unitysouth.org. It's always my pleasure to say thank you for listening to New Beginnings. Connect with me on Twitter at Freddie Bell. Also, you can start the conversation on Instagram at Freddie Bell Radio. And if you like more information about Words to the Wise, FreddieBell.com. And did you know that today is National Butterscotch Pudding Day? It offers a sweet taste of a wholesome and creamy dessert. Brown sugar and butter star in this recipe for butterscotch pudding. However, corn syrup, vanilla, and salt are also sometimes used. Butterscotch adds amazing flavor to items such as sauces, candies, and frostings. An 1848 newspaper offers the scoop on this yummy pudding. According to Housewives Corner and Muslack Cream Company, the real recipe for making Doncaster butterscotch is 1 pound of butter, 1 pound of sugar, and a whole lot of love. Enjoy butterscotch on its own or use it in other recipes. The flavor goes well with graham cracker crust for pies or layered in a trifle too. You can add nuts or a caramel drizzle for texture and visual appeal. Spike your pudding with bourbon or rum. It's the weekend. Pudding shots are delicious little cocktails. It's National Butterscotch Pudding Day. And here are today's words to the wise. Charity should be the rule, not the exception. Words to the wise, charity should be the rule, not the exception. If you like more information about Words to the Wise, You can find it at freddiebell.com. That's our show for this week. Thank you so much for being with us. And a special thanks to Lybell Sternbach for stopping by, as well as Joe McKenzie, Cassie Crandall, our friends from Unity South Twin Cities, and most of all, you. Thank you for listening. Thank you for calling. Thank you for making us a part of your week. Reminding you that you can follow us on Instagram with Freddie Bell Radio. Connect with me with a tweet on Twitter by using @FreddieBell. And if you'd like more information about the book Words to the Wise, FreddieBell.com. Thanks for listening. Thanks for calling. Thanks for making us a part of your week. And remember that every day is a chance for a new beginning. We'll see you next time.